Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Lisa Dillman from TheAthletic.com. She's their senior hockey writer in Los Angeles covering the Kings. Lisa, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. The Kings into Winnipeg on Tuesday night to face the Jets, so obviously a good time to talk about the team from Los Angeles. And I think, Lisa, most outside observers would say that this was always going to be a bit of a struggle for the Kings this year, as they seem to be a team and a franchise in flux and a little bit of transition as they maybe move on from their Stanley Cup contender days of a few years ago. But new head coach Todd McLellan behind the bench, you know, the team off to a 2-5 record so far. What has McLellan brought to the team that they didn't have last season as they went through a couple of different coaches?
Well, I think he's managed to bring several things in with him, a sense of accountability. He's an excellent communicator, as I'm sure you all know. When things happen, the players like want to know why. All summer he kept talking about the why, and that the players of the modern day player wants to know why something is happening. So he is very clear in his what he's pleased about, and he's also very clear what he's displeased about. So I think last year there were struggles on the ice, but then there was this mystery about like why certain things were happening. You know, poor play was being punished in certain circumstances, and then not. So now I think players really have a feeling where they stand with him. Having said that, as you mentioned, they're going through a rebuild, and it might end up being a little more painful than people thought.
Lisa, we have to ask you about Jonathan Quick. You know, I'm sure that you saw some of the rumblings that Jonathan Quick might be an option in a trade for the Devils, who obviously are struggling big time this year. And I think you'd probably agree that the likelihood of that happening is minimal, if not non-existent. But, you know, you look at his numbers, and I know you know the numbers, .793 save percentage, his goals against is above .600. And that's just not something we're used to seeing when it comes to Jonathan Quick. You know, he was such a important part of the two Stanley Cup champion winning Kings team. So I guess, what do you see from covering the team for so long that's going on with Jonathan Quick? He's obviously got 4 years left on his contract, but why has he struggled so much early on?
Yeah, 4 years at 5.8. It's first, I want to address the trade rumor. It's like, great, you know, we're not playing fantasy hockey here.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Wave our hand and make problems go away. And that's the problem, is I never want to like throw complete cold water on any trade because, you know, contracts, as you all know, can be moved, even bad ones. But I think there's several things at play. First of all, the groin injuries, they've taken a toll. The athleticism, the explosiveness that you once saw is not quite there. You kind of wonder, he would never say this because he's not terribly introspective with us when it comes to his own play, but how much is that weighing in the back of his mind, if at all? And secondly, the way that the system, they're playing a different system now, and he has different people in front of him. It's not that rock-solid veteran defense of the glory years where, you know, Matt Green and Rob Scuderi and Willie Mitchell in their prime, and other than Drew Doughty and Alec Martinez, it's a very, very young, untested defense. So there are all those factors, and it's sad to see. I mean, he's as competitive as hell, and he's fighting it, and we talked to several goalie experts, and they kept saying, well, we think he can still get it back. Talk to me in 6 weeks. We'll see where he stands. But so far, it's been a big struggle. And, you know, Jack Campbell started the last two games, and we're not sure about tonight because, you know, coaches never tell us. But if he were to start three straight, then it's a signal that, you know, winds of change are happening.
Lisa, sometimes it's difficult to keep the pundits on the East Coast awake for those late West Coast games, but that Drew Doughty and Matthew Tkachuk rivalry seems to be keeping everybody focused. Why has that become such a good rivalry, and why is it so good for hockey?
Well, yeah, it's funny. I wrote a combination with my counterpart in Calgary, wrote a roundtable, why it is good for hockey. And, you know, you have you know, you have two star players that are impactful for their team, have meaningful contributions, that are backing up the talk. I mean, backing up the talk, and that's what I think, that's what people have really gravitated towards. They, you know, that game in Calgary, you know, I believe it was the second game of the season for the Kings, the third for the Flames, and there was such a high level of interest in that game that, you know, it wasn't some manufactured rivalry. You know, it was real. The hatred is real. A couple times yesterday, we were talking to Drew Doughty about Matthew Tkachuk. He couldn't even say his name. I think he called him that guy. I have to go look at my story again. But he couldn't even say his name. So it's once again, and Doughty delivers in overtime with a power play goal, and then puts his, you know, hand to his ear to the crowd who had been booing him the entire night.
Lisa Dillman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Sticking with Drew Doughty, Lisa, this is a guy who's an ultimate competitor. He's used to winning, be it, you know, at the NHL level, be it at the international level. You know, how is he dealing with this team that's obviously in flux and is not expected to do a lot of winning this year and maybe for the next couple of years, question mark?
Yeah, well, yeah, last season was definitely difficult for him, and you know, and the season has had its ups and downs already as well. When he first started with the Kings, I guess everybody kind of forgets the history is cloud. You know, this was not a good team. His first season was 08-09. This was a really quite a bad team when he first joined them. That was like the last rebuild. So he does have a little experience with losing. It's not like he came in and they started winning right away. It took a little while. Having said that, you know, when you're used to winning, it's really hard to go backward. And I think the rational part of him sees the pieces are starting to fit together. The drafts are looking good. He was really excited about playing with their Tobias Bjornfort, who got sent down yesterday to Ontario. He was their first round pick, number 22. The kid really surprised everybody, stuck around, played three games. And I think, you know, Doughty saw his potential, was excited about playing with him. But he's an emotional guy, and I wonder how he's going to be feeling in March, you know, February and March, if this season is anything like last season.
Elisa, you just mentioned Tobias Bjornfot was sent down to the Ontario Reign yesterday. They also called up Nikolai Prokhorkin, and that was a player that, you know, a lot of observers were excited to see, and he obviously started the season in the American Hockey League, and he was a point-per-game player with St. Petersburg in the Russian League last year. But is he a player that we could see tonight against Calgary or coming up next week in Winnipeg? And what are the expectations for him? Because I think the expectations maybe in training camp had to be tempered a little bit, and he wasn't going to be you know, kind of a fixture in the top six. But it looks like they're so desperate for scoring help that that's why they called him up.
Yeah, he'd really been roughly penciled in as the third center, and you know, the camp didn't reflect that, and he started in Ontario, like you pointed out. To your point, I do think you could possibly see him in Winnipeg. Yesterday was his first practice. They didn't do any line rushes, so we weren't quite sure what was going to be happening for tonight. And in fact, you know, the morning skate's in about 2 hours or so, so we'll know more then. He could be in tonight. But, you know, they start the trip off in Winnipeg, and then they go on to St. Louis and Chicago and Minnesota. So, you know, they have to sort of see, because he has other options. If it's not working out here, you know, he can go back to the KHL. And I think there's not a hard deadline, I don't think, but they need to see what they have. Otherwise, he can go back and then test that situation. So I think you will be seeing him definitely on this trip. I don't know for sure about the game in Winnipeg.
No, Lisa, on Monday you wrote why everything that ails the Kings can be blamed on Taylor Swift. So maybe explain to our listeners why Taylor Swift is causing the Kings so much consternation.
Yeah, only one win since they covered up her banner. Well, it's funny. I don't know if you guys are superstitious. I'm not terribly superstitious. I mean, I guess there's a difference between superstition and routine. But the Kings heard loud and clear from their fan base that they weren't happy about this Taylor Swift banner that hangs at Staples Center. You know, you have the Lakers greatness, and then there's this, you know, Taylor Swift banner reflecting her, you know, record number of concerts at Staples Center. So anyways, hockey fans are really superstitious, and the message to them was they wanted it covered up. And the Los Angeles Clippers, in fairness, have already been doing this, but they didn't get quite as much attention as the Kings did. So the banner went up in 2015, and you know, people who are superstitious have noted that the Kings haven't been winning since then, the Lakers haven't been winning since then, and the Clippers are the Clippers. So so the banner is covered up during Kings games, and it's I went out in the concourse and interviewed a few fans and about the development, and the first guy I talked to says it's wonderful. He's wearing a Tyler Toffoli jersey. I don't think he's washed it since 2015, and I have to tell you, it did smell like that. Like it had not been washed. And he showed me a food stain on his arm, and I'm like, oh my god, this is my favorite fan interview of the year. I really don't know what's going to pass this up. But he said, I'm superstitious. I don't wash this jersey, and Taylor Swift haven't won. We haven't won since the jersey went up, since the banner was covered or went up, and now they've covered it. So it's a fun thing. You know, Todd McClellan, we asked him about it. He said, I didn't even know what you guys were talking about. I didn't even know it was an issue till somebody brought it up to me, and he was kind of laughing about it, too. But, as my colleague at The Athletic, Rich Hammond, who's written about it a couple times, noted, it's these things start off as a funny thing, and then, you know, the losses pile up, and fans are like,
They take on a life of their own.
Yeah, I mean, they get superstitious if the radio anthem singer's not singing, and the Kings PR director said, in their mind, we're down 1-0 if Pia's not in the national anthem.
You know, whatever it's going to take to win a game, I guess, the anthems or banners being covered up, it doesn't matter. Last question for you, Lisa. You know, Jeff Carter, you know, he's obviously, towards the end of his career. This is a guy who only a couple of years ago, you know, had, you know, 30-plus goals. What are realistic expectations for Jeff Carter at this point in his career?
Well, clearly, you know, you have that kind of injury that he suffered, and he hasn't been the same player. There's certain things that the explosiveness, the things that he could once do that are not there at all. Right now they have him playing, I sort of like this line, they have him, Blake Lizotte, an undrafted free agent, is this kid, you'll see him next week, full of energy, just hustle, 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 favorite of the coaches. So they sort of have him in the middle with Jeff and Tyler Toffoli, and I'm sort of liking that line. You know, having said that, they'll probably change it tonight, but he's been a good spark plug, and I think Jeff Carter needs that energy. He needs that burst to help him. I mean, they have him playing on the wing, which is a really good move. They should have done it last year. I just didn't think, I thought that was long overdue. Realistic expectation, well, he's still searching for his first goal, so, but this is a team who hasn't been scoring either. They haven't scored in their last two games, so I don't know. I don't know I don't even know if they know what they can get out of him at this point. You know, that's kind of where it's come to.
The Kings and the Flames will resume battle and the rivalry later on tonight. I'm not sure that the Kings' visit to Winnipeg on Tuesday night will have the same level of intensity, but it ought to be entertaining nonetheless. Lisa Dillman covers the Los Angeles Kings for TheAthletic.com.
Lisa, they've got to get a Justin Bieber banner up at Staples Center. He bought Taylor Swift's catalog, right? So,
how do you know that?
I'm hoping Taylor Swift or one of her reps actually says something about this at some point so we have some more back and forth, but you know, or maybe she can come and sing the national anthem. So it's been fun. It's been a fun thing.
I don't know what it says about me, but the fact that the Islanders have that Billy Joel banner up in Nassau County Coliseum, that's my personal favorite musician banner, which is apparently a thing now. I don't know how to deal with any of this. Lisa, thank you.
It's still rock and roll to me.
There you go, Lisa. Lisa Dillman of TheAthletic.com. When we come back, we talk about tomorrow evening's Jets-Oilers matchup. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Josh Bailey, as Mayfield did a good job to get that puck back in behind his own net and get it out towards center ice. And then Bailey protected, made sure he was across center, across the Jets line, and he sends it toward the open cage. And it's a empty netter scored by the New York Islanders.
Oh, Josh Bailey into the empty net. And with that, the Winnipeg Jets have lost their third game in a row. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets and the struggles of the Jets over the last week. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning, a week that was not a successful week for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and really unfortunate, guys, because you know, after watching that first period, first of all, the Jets could have easily had one or two more goals, but you could say the same thing in the second period for the New York Islanders, right? So, I mean, it was just a very disappointing, you know, second and third period in that game. And absolutely, Drew, I mean, the Jets are in the middle of a bad losing streak, and it's even worse that it's at home. But, you know, you look at, you know, some of the periods that they've been able to put together, and it's quite puzzling. And I realize that the penalty kill is an issue, and, you know, the Jets are missing some bodies. And right now on defense, I mean, there is no better time for Sammy Niku to get healthy and come back and either play for the Moose first or come right back and play for the Jets, because you know, right now you have defensemen that at the beginning of the year, you know, and I'm talking about even before the season started, going back to training camp, you didn't think that you would be playing guys like Anthony Boteto and Dmitry Kulikov, you know, the types of minutes that they're playing. You would expect them to be playing, you know, 12, 13 minutes, not 19, 20, 21 minutes. And then when you're talking about, you know, Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk, obviously, you know, a guy like Morrissey, you expected him to be playing, you know, big time minutes. But, you know, Neil Pionk, we weren't really sure. And, you know, Pullman, of course, is paired up with Morrissey now, but we've seen Morrissey and Pionk. But that game against the Islanders, I thought, was the perfect example where one goal just kind of changed the entire outlook of the game. And that happens often in hockey. But, you know, I thought that the Jets really deserved, you know, a better fate in that game, not because of, you know, I'm not taking anything away from the Islanders, Dave, but it was just that first period might have been the best period that we've seen the Jets play this year. And I'm not joking. I mean, they were all over the Islanders, and, you know, give Semyon Varlamov a lot of credit for the way he played, because he hasn't had the best start to the season trying to kind of replicate what Robin Leonard did last year for the Islanders. But, I mean, the Jets, I thought that after Matt Barzal opened the scoring for the Islanders, and then they went on the penalty kill, and we know that the penalty kill has been a huge issue for the Jets this year, and guys, has been a huge issue for the Jets in years past.
It's two years in a row now that the penalty kill has been a problem. Last year, the penalty kill, and we'll talk more about the penalty kill later on in the show, but last year, the penalty kill finished 22nd overall in the NHL. We know right now it's dead last through nine games this season.
And Barzal's second goal that he scored on the power play, it just really seemed to take the life out of the Jets.
The first goal was a power play goal. The second goal
The second goal, you're right. The first goal was the power play goal. The second goal that was scored
late in the second period where they just
the odd man rush.
Where the Jets, where the Jets failed to get the puck in deep.
Yeah, it was Morrissey that unfortunately didn't get it in deep.
Yeah. No, doesn't get it in deep. The puck, you know, is knocked out of the air by Johnny Boychuk. It's immediately transitioned up the ice. This is in the last minute of the second period, or right close to the end of the second period.
17 seconds left.
There you go. And boom, it's 2-1. And the Jets, you know, a team that played a very good first period, to your point there, Ezzy, is all of a sudden down two goals to one. They haven't scored a 5-on-5 goal in now 8 periods of hockey, almost 9 periods of hockey. The last 5-on-5 even strength goal they scored came against early in the first period against the Pittsburgh Penguins last Sunday. So this is a team right now that's struggling to score, has a woeful power play. Lots not going well for the Jets
right now. Actually been
better. Pardon me, a woeful penalty kill. Pardon me.
Right.
Lots not going well for the Winnipeg Jets right now, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, you could focus on that for sure. But I'm with Ezzy. I thought it was a really good game. I mean, you're leading 1-0. You know, the score, Varlamov played well. They had outshot them 16-5 in that first period. And it turned out that I think that was like 7 minutes into the second when Barzal scored.
7:41.
Yeah, so that was the first shot of the period for the Islanders. So, I mean, the Jets had played a fairly good, almost, you know, 30 minutes of hockey. That's why they say you got to play a full 60. You can't play just a good 30. But the fact is, the Jets have played a fairly good game. And, you know, Barzal's a good player. It was a beautiful shot. But, you know, again, we got to talk about that Kopp, Ehlers, and Connor line. I mean, they were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that was a positive.
Which makes it, now they're going to break him up as soon as Brian Little comes back, which we'll talk about the forward lines as well throughout the show.
You know, but again, like I said, it's tough. I mean, look, you win three in a row, then you lose three in a row. I mean, it's one of those situations. It's not, as Izzy said, it's not ideal, especially when you're at home, especially against, you know, some teams. Although it's ironic because then you look, Pittsburgh's been winning. The Coyotes have been winning. So, I mean, these teams that look like they should be maybe, in, you know, 2 points on the board, those teams are doing pretty well right now around the rest of the league. So you're not exactly, you know, beating teams that are easy. And really, the Jets aren't in a position to look at any team. They're not like the Jets from 2 years ago where they could be looking at teams and saying these are lesser than. These are teams that the Jets have to look at and think to themselves, these are teams that are coming in here, and it's not a guarantee that we're going to take 2 points.
Right now, as currently constructed, this Winnipeg Jets team is what, 4-5 mm-hmm. through their first 9 games?
Yeah.
You know, a decidedly average record. You watch this team night in, night out, and what do you see? You see a decidedly average team that has some positives and some warts. And I think that they are exactly what their record says they are. And I think it's I think it's accurately reflecting what they are as a team. They're not a great hockey team that's getting, you know, that should have a 7-2 record, but they're getting bad luck or they're getting, you know, bad bounces. They're an average hockey team that is going to win some games and then is going to lose some games as currently constructed. That's just what they are.
And they also don't have Brian Little.
Absolutely.
They don't have Sammy Niku. They don't have Dustin Byfuglien.
And that's what they would say, that if they had their full roster, they'd be a better performing team.
Right. But having said that, the Penguins don't have Evgeny Malkin, Nick Bjugstad, Jared McCann. Patrick Hornquist is back in the lineup now, but
everybody's got injuries.
Where are the Penguins in the standings? Right.
The
answer is they're first.
Yeah.
So I mean, the Penguins have a bunch of injuries. When you're talking about Malkin, when you're talking about a future Hall of Famer,
superstar.
So you're not talking about just, you know, an average player. So they're still winning. Mm-hmm. They're still scoring goals. We just saw it the other night. In Winnipeg, they scored 7 on the Jets, but
they beat Dallas last night 4-2.
Well, yeah, and that's why they're in first place. They keep winning. But the point I'm trying to make here is that you're going to have injuries at certain points in the season, whether it's at the beginning of the season like it is now,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, in the midway point of the season or later in the season. But when you're talking about this Jets team, you know, and I think Murat did an excellent job for The Athletic breaking down what's happening defensively on this team, you know, on the topic of how they're doing a good job of standing up the opposition at the blue line. But in zone, they're having issues. And I think when you talk, it goes back to what I said before. I mean, at no point, I don't think, do the Jets want to be using Carl Dahlstrom for 18 to 22 minutes a game. And I think right now, with no Sammy Niku, and obviously Nathan Beaulieu is going to come back, you know, probably in the next couple of weeks, right? We expect. We don't know exactly when, but originally he was supposed to be out for 4 weeks, and it's been 3. So, I mean,
if you do
the math, I mean, Nathan Beaulieu should help out the Jets. Niku should be back eventually, Dave. I mean, it's a little bit indefinite right now.
Didn't play for the Moose last night.
Is not playing.
Is not going to play for the Moose again tonight. So whatever that lingering injury is, or I don't know if he's re-aggravated the injury from training camp.
Well, that's Coach Vincent. I mean, now, before we knew it was the groin when it was during training camp, and now it's been modified to lower body injury.
God forbid you know the actual injury.
It doesn't really matter. But the fact is that he essentially, well, he didn't practice at all this week. Didn't play last night, and Coach Vince said he's not playing today. So, I mean, you've got a guy who will probably practice. I mean, again, I'm assuming. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But when the Moose resume practice on Monday, we'll see what happens with them, or Tuesday. But anyways, Sammy Niku is a question mark still.
And, you know, going back to what Drew said, Dave, about, you know, you expected kind of the Jets to be around 500 based on the composition of their roster and the injuries and all of that. But how many really good teams have they faced? Right, I mean, with the exception of Pittsburgh and the Islanders, and we expect Arizona to be pushing for a playoff spot, I mean, the Jets haven't exactly had a tough schedule. They've played a lot of games,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not trying to be negative Nelly here, but all I'm saying is, like, they haven't played Tampa Bay, they haven't played Boston, I mean, you haven't played St. Louis, the defending champs, you haven't played Colorado,
yeah.
I mean, you haven't played Carolina, who's first in the East right now, I don't know exactly when, but...
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Cassian puts it there for Matt Benning. That shot got blocked, taken by Anthony Bitetto.
this game will come to an end with the Edmonton Oilers defeating the Winnipeg Jets.
That game had a little less importance as it was an exhibition game, but that was the last time the Jets and Oilers met, going back about 3 weeks or so ago, I think the end of September. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live here on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I am your host, Drew Mandel. Reminder, busy day here on the station. We've got Blue and Gold game day coming up later on this afternoon. The Bombers are into Calgary, a key matchup as they do battle with the Stampeders, looking to maybe somehow scratch and crawl their way towards either the Western Conference Final, hosting that, the Western Division Final, or hosting a playoff game. In any event, they need to probably win out and then get some help. It starts this afternoon against the Stampeders in Calgary, and then later on tonight, the Moose doing battle, of course, against the Iowa Wild, a very banged-up Moose defense, Dave Minuk. They fell last night. Would they have something like 10 penalties against them?
Yeah,
10 minor penalties?
Let's just put it this way. None of the players like J.C. LePond and Pascal Vincent, Coach Vincent, wanted to talk about the penalties that they were called for.
The officiating was a little suspect last night?
It was just bizarre. I mean, it just, you know, it's like, you know, the expression death by a thousand cuts. It was death by a thousand penalties. It was just too many. I mean, there was no flow to the game. And it's interesting because the games previous week against Toronto were the complete opposite. There are almost no whistles. The games flew by. And then last night against Iowa, and it really, you know, I mean, there was a little bit of, fighting, a little altercation at the end of the first period. But the refs just called too much. It was just, like, put away the whistles and let some stuff go. And, like, they had already called, I think, three penalties in a row against the Moose, finally gave the Moose a power play, and then called a bench minor against the Moose, so it ended up being a 4-on-4. So it was just, it was totally disproportionate for what it should have been. And, like,
Everybody paid their tickets to watch the officials officiate.
Well, and the interesting thing is the Moose lost Cam Schilling. He got just walloped, couldn't even get up in the first period. And then so they were down to five defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost Logan Stanley in the second, and he didn't play the entire third period. So you had four defensemen playing. You had Luke Green, you had Jonathan Kovacevic, you had Peter Stojkovic, and you had, who's the fourth one I'm thinking of now? Nelson Oje. So he had four defensemen, two of whom had 20 pro games in Kovacevic and Green, 20 pro games under their belt. So they played four defense, and it was funny because after the game, Pascal Vincent talked about how they considered some of the forwards going up and playing, or going back and playing defense, but it wasn't necessary because the guys were able to step up. But it was just a very chaotic game. It's an interesting Moose team. They're actually a pretty good team. You know, you've got a lot of good prospects. I mean, I pointed out before the game, four of the six guys playing defense were drafted by the Jets. And actually, Stojkovic was the final draft pick of the Thrashers in 2010 in the seventh round. So you've really got a homegrown defense, and that's obviously what you want to see is some of the prospects will, you know, eventually get the call up. Kovacevic is an interesting player, good heads-up player, big boys, but he's got to be about 6'3", 6'4", maybe not 6'4", but he's a pretty big boy, filling in and stuff, filling up his body because, you know, of course, still relatively young, but good heads-up player, has a good offensive head on his shoulders, so... it's an interesting Moose team, but there's a lot of interesting players. Juno Luoto is an interesting guy. Andre Chibasov is an interesting guy. Both those guys are pretty polished, pretty, you know, pro, and you can see that they'll kind of maybe earn themselves opportunities. You've got other guys, Logan Shaw, Seth Griffith. Those are veteran guys, and then you've got some of the other younger prospects. But Leon Gwonki, who's a guy, you know, fans are familiar with, he'll get an opportunity most likely today. And
hopefully Trouba doesn't have all of his sticks.
Yes, hopefully Jacob Trouba has given him back his sticks. So the, you know, the one thing with the Moose is plenty of opportunity for these young guys to play some games, play some minutes, and learn some new things because, again, no Niku, no Logan Stanley, and possibly no Cam Schilling tonight.
Well, the Moose in the Wild, 6 p.m. tonight, the Moose will look revenge to try and get revenge after last night's defeat. The Jets, of course, looking to get back on the winning side of the ledger tomorrow evening against the juggernaut Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers winners last night, 2-1 at home against the Detroit Red Wings. They moved to 7-1 on the season, 31 goals for, 20 goals against. And to me, that's almost the most important part of the Oilers so far, is that, you know, through eight games, they've only given up those 20 goals, so they have a very decent goals against average. You knew that they'd be able to score with McDavid and with Draisaitl and with James Neal, obviously getting hooked up to the fountain of youth. But this is a very dangerous and a very good Edmonton Oilers team, at least thus far, coming to Bell MTS Place tomorrow night.
Yeah, and we could spend the next 20 minutes talking about, probably more like an hour, talking about how good Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid have been this year.
His goal from earlier this week.
Well,
again.
It's just
you
incredible.
Say it every week, though.
No, and McDavid, like the thing is, Draisaitl has been almost as impressive as McDavid, right? Like McDavid is well on his way to winning an Art Ross Trophy, right? But Draisaitl's not that far behind, and we know he's coming off of that big 50 goal season. And Zach Cassian has actually fit in really nicely on that line. People forget Cassian was a first round draft pick, and you know people know the story of Cassian, and it's a great story. But you know he's really fit in nicely on that line going back to last year. But the second line with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins between Alex Chiasson and James Neal has been the big story. And we'll talk to Dave Jamieson about that next hour. I mean, Neal has surpassed everyone's greatest expectations with 9 goals already, right? So you look up and down the lineup and you say, well, how are they doing this? You know, you're without Adam Larson on the back end. In the bottom six, you've got guys like Thomas Yurko, Josh Archibald. But that third line, I mentioned it in previous weeks, Jujhar Khaira. And you've got Riley Sheahan, who's the center there. Patrick Russell is a guy Dave would be familiar with. He played for Bakersfield last year, had 18 goals. But Patrick Russell is a guy that was undrafted that nobody really knew that much about. And he's actually been a really effective player on that third line for Dave Tippett. But overall, it goes back to kind of the theme that we were talking about in previous weeks. Dave Tippett has brought that professionalism and that structure to this Oilers team. I mean, they're not going to sustain this, guys. The Oilers are not going to keep winning at this rate. But you look at the, you know, when you start off the season 7-1, 8-1, I mean, you're putting yourself in front of so many teams, and you look at those teams in that division that are struggling, namely the Los Angeles Kings. I mean, they're really separating themselves from the pack. Obviously, you know, we expect Vegas to end up ultimately winning this division, but you know, San Jose hasn't exactly been on fire. They're starting
three and four through their 7 games.
And they're starting to come around a little bit, but
they've won 3 straight.
You know, the Flames, same thing as well. They haven't had the best start. They're going to be in there. It's going to be the Flames and the Sharks and the Golden Knights that you expect to be, you know, battling for, you know, Pacific Division supremacy. But the point is, this is a well-rounded team. Yeah. And you know, it's ultimately going to come back to Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith have both been playing very well in net. Mm-hmm. Mikko Koskinen's numbers are up big time over last year, especially when you're talking about that save percentage. So Koskinen has been really solid.
934 save percentage for Koskinen, 917 for Smith. They've each started 4 games.
Right, and that's kind of what we expected, a timeshare in net for the Oilers, right? And we weren't really sure about either of those goalies because they were coming off of subpar years. So, I mean, top to bottom, I mean, Ethan Bear is a guy that we have mentioned last week. I mean, from Saskatchewan, you know, he's got a couple goals already this year, playing on the top pair with Darnell Nurse. I mean, it's been really impressive what they've been able to do, you know, with injuries and lack of depth. So it starts at the top with McDavid and Draisaitl, but this is not, I think, a one-dimensional team. I mean, this Oilers team, I think, is the real deal. I'm not going to pick them to be a Stanley Cup favorite right now, but guys, they're well on their way to being a playoff team.
The Jets defense, the Jets five-man unit, because it does take 5 men to defend against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, will have to be clicking at all cylinders because that is just how dangerous those two players are when they're on the ice. You always need to be aware of where they are. You always need to be aware of how you mitigate their impact. They're going to have an impact. The key is mitigating that impact, and right now, those two players, Dave, are just absolutely dominant, you know, talented players, as you'd expect from guys drafted that high and you know, generational talents, as they say.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it, and I think that's a function of we're seeing what this team is able to do with that. And, you know, we've seen that in the past where guys are able, like Crosby, Malkin, that sort of, you have those generational talents, well, they're difference makers. So when you have, you know, a guy like Connor McDavid, and we talked about it at the beginning of the season when we did our predictions, we all always predict, you know, you always go with Connor McDavid because the guy is just the best player in the NHL without question.
When we come back, Mike...
Can I throw one more stat before we go to break here about the Oilers?
Please.
James Neal, Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid have 20 goals between the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
The Oilers as a team have 14.
The Oilers?
Pardon me. Senators.
Try that again. The Senators.
The Senators have 14 goals as a team, and those three have 20.
So you're saying
just as a statistic to show you how badly that those guys are tearing up the league right now.
And how poor the Ottawa Senators are. When we come back, Mike Commodore is going to join us. We'll look around the NHL. Always a fun time with Commie 22. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program one of our very good friends, always entertaining, Mike Commodore. Mike, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure.
What's going on in Winnipeg?
Well, we're a little bit, people are a little bit upset regarding the Winnipeg Jets and their start to the season, but you might expect that given their sort of struggles so far. Let me ask you, from a player, you know, a guy who's been in successful dressing rooms and been in dressing rooms that have gotten off to some slow starts, how important is it for a team to feel good about themselves through the first, you know, 10 games of the season? Or is it easy to overcome that, you know, as the season goes on?
I mean, I think everybody wants to get off to a great start, obviously. It's like, oh, yeah, we'd all like to be, you know, Buffalo. Well, yeah, Buffalo this year or somebody, a team like that where, mm-hmm. you know, you're off to a 7-1 start or whatever it is. But that doesn't always happen. I think especially in Winnipeg's case with, you know, they had some guys where, you know, some restricted free agents that are coming in a little late or some things going on there. You got the Bufflin kind of situation that kind of popped out of nowhere. So there's a lot going on there. Are they off to a great start? No, it's not a great start. Are they off to a terrible start? No, they're not off to a terrible start either. I mean, you could be the Minnesota Wild. I mean, you're way better off than that. So as much as you'd like to get off to an awesome start, I think 500 out of the gates are right around there for the first few games. I really don't think it's the end of the world. I mean, an example, and we're not to that point yet with any team, but I mean, you just have to look back to last year with, and you don't want to obviously bank on that, but with the St. Louis Blues, I mean, they were terrible for the first half of the year. They end up winning the whole thing. Do you want to bank on that as a team? No, because I don't think that'll ever happen again, but I don't think it's the end of the world for Winnipeg. You're basically 500. I think everything's going to be okay. Just keep plugging along.
Tommy, we've obviously got LA hosting the Calgary Flames, and we have to ask you about this rivalry because a couple of weeks ago, obviously, Matthew Tkachuk had a couple of goals in regulation, and then Drew Doughty scored the eventual OT winner, and we know that these two players just don't like each other. But is this not just good for the entire sport of hockey? Obviously, you know, the Kings are most likely not going to be a playoff team, whereas we expect the Flames to be a playoff team, but this has got to be the best rivalry when you talk about Tkachuk versus Doughty and the way they go to battle on the ice.
Yeah, I do think it's great. I think if I had to guess, I would say, and I think Doughty's already kind of come out and said it, I think they probably get a little bit tired of talking about it. But at the same time, I mean, it is a, look, I mean, it's professional hockey. I mean, it's a business, but it's also, it's entertainment. That's what it is. That's why we watch, because it's entertaining. And when there are rivalries, I think it's, you know, with the new NHL, and I shouldn't even say that. There are lots of games during the year that go by. Like, I just went and watched the Flames play Detroit on Thursday night. I was at the game. And, it got a little heated there in the third period. But for a lot of that game, it was like, man, this is pretty boring. Like, there's nobody hitting each other. There's really nothing going on a whole lot. So it's nice that, and it works out especially good when you have two world-class players. I mean, Doughty's been awesome forever. He's Norris Trophy, a couple Stanley Cups. I mean, he's a great player, and he's been a great player for a long time. He competes and he battles, and getting into it a little bit with a younger guy who's off to a fabulous start to his career, I think it definitely makes the games a lot more interesting. It gives you something to watch. And then especially with that, I was at that game too on Tuesday night when L.A. was in town. And then when it works out where they each have, I think they each had 3 points. Doughty had the game-winning goal. So obviously he's fired up because he's getting booed every time he touches the puck here. So scoring the overtime winner for him, I sure felt great. And so I think it's great. Do I think they're tired of talking about it? Yes, but look, that's part of the deal. And I hope the little rivalry between the two of them continues.
You know, Mike, you touched on it a little bit in your first answer with the Bufflin situation, but how tough has that got to be for his teammates, you know, with the Jets, waiting for him? Have you ever seen a situation like this where you have a guy who looks like he's going to join the team at training camp, doesn't, and now it's kind of lingering with the team? Like, how much of an impact is this having with his teammates currently, and what happens if he decides to come back? Do you think that has any impact at that point?
Yeah. Look, I love him as a player. He's been great. He's been awesome in Winnipeg. I don't know. And correct me if I'm wrong. The only thing I know about this situation, it sounds like, I don't think it's a personal, like, I've been on the radio a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, we were talking about it a little bit, but you got to be careful because at first I didn't know if it was like a family situation. I have no idea what his family situation is at all. So I didn't know if it was something personal in that regards. But it sounds like it's just not sure if he wants to play. Is that correct?
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yeah, there's a pretty big cone of silence right now, but that seems to be the general consensus.
Yeah. So I feel bad for the Jets because that's a big salary. And if the guy's not, hey, look, if he doesn't want to play anymore, he doesn't want to play anymore. And that's fine. That's, you've had a great career. If it's over for you, if you don't want to play, you don't want to play. That's, you got to respect the guy's decision if that's what he decides to do. But I do think it's going to get to the point here where he needs, if it's not a personal thing where there's something going on with his family or something like that, if it's just him sitting at home being like, I'm not sure if I want to play, whether it's because of his ankle hurts or whatever is going on, I think it's going to get to the point here, if it hasn't already, but fairly soon, where he needs to make a decision. Either you're in or you're out. Either way is great. I would think that if he decides, wakes up tomorrow morning, is like, you know what, I want to play, I'm back, I'm sure they'd welcome him back with open arms. But if he's deciding whether, if it's just simply, I'm not sure if I want to play anymore, I think it's getting to the point here fairly soon where it's like, look, like, Dustin, you got to make up your mind. Either you're in or you're out. Either way is fine, but we need to know, because otherwise I think that's unfair to the team. And especially, he's a huge part of that team. He's making a huge salary. You know, so it's tying things up that way too. Where it kind of makes it unfair. Like, if the Jets need to move on, you need to let them know so they can move on. If you want to be in, let them know and get back in. The only thing that kind of concerns me a little bit, Justin Williams is a little bit like that, but the only thing that kind of concerns me is that if Bufflin is sitting at home and if he isn't skating and if he isn't doing a whole lot, but Bufflin is kind of like me. If I, you know, when I stopped skating, I put on 15 pounds. And for him, I think it's plus a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to be hard for him to come back from. So, yeah, I think if it is simply a thing, and I want to be careful talking about it because I don't want to come off the wrong way. Like, if he's got a personal situation going on, then none of this means anything. You got to take care of your family and all that. Mm-hmm. But if it's just simply, I'm not sure if I want to play, I think it's getting to the point where he needs to make up his mind, one way or the other. I think that would be, it's got to get to a point here where he's got to be fair to his teammates and fair to the organization.
Mike Commodore is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Mike from, of course, his extensive NHL career. Mike, a lot of talk here in Winnipeg this week about identity and the team's identity, you know, through 9 games of the regular season. How difficult is it for a team to come up with their identity, and then and how important is it for a team to be able to point to their identity in the course of a season?
Yeah, it's going to take some time. I think for most, like, for instance, the I haven't seen a Jets game yet, but I'm looking forward. I might actually go to the game in Regina, but it was, for instance, the Flames were playing Philly, like, on Tuesday, and it was glaringly obvious watching the game. It's like, okay, Philly has a pretty decent team here, but they've only played 3 games. The Flames have played, you know, twice. At the time, that was their 7th game. It was Philly's 4th game, I think, and they've been all over the place, and they were still trying to figure out, his kind of puck was everywhere. Guys are turning it over and everything like that, but I think it takes some time, and I don't even know the word identity. I don't even know how to really define it when it comes to a hockey team. But I think at the end of the day, if it starts with work at things and go from there. But that can take some time to get it going. And like I said, I've been on the radio for the last 2 weeks and we're breaking down the Flames, and it's like, okay, look, yeah, all right, they lost a couple games and didn't play well here. Look, it's not the end of the world. Brian Burke actually put it in a good way. When he was a general manager, he was like, when I was a GM, he's like, I don't want to be judging any of these teams yet. when I was a general manager, I always gave it the first 10 games and a long road trip. So sometimes that would take 14, 15 games, whatever, however the schedule ends up laying out. After that, then we meet together, we reassess, and okay, what are we here? How are we looking? Before that, I think to start making judgments or panicking or thinking, or if you're off to a great start, thinking you're going to win the cup, or if you're off to an awesome start, I think you got to pump the brakes a little bit and give it a few games.
Mike, you know, we've been talking quite a bit about the Flames, but you're from Fort Saskatchewan, which is obviously northeast of Edmonton. The Oilers, on the other hand, are off to the hottest of possible starts that they could ever imagine right now. And, you know, James Neal obviously coming over from Calgary. Just how nice must it be for Oilers fans who have gone year after year with disappointment, and they're now first place in the Western Conference. I think they're first place in the NHL, if I'm not mistaken. And specifically, James Neal right now, who just, it seems like everything he shoots goes in the net.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm happy for the Oilers. It's good. They might be planning a cup parade a little premature up there, but they're off to a great start, and it's been good to see. I went up to the home opener, stayed at James's place, and watched the game and everything. You know, it's good. I'm happy for the Oilers. I think living in Alberta here, well, Western Canada, period. I think it's hockey's a lot more fun when the Western Canada. I'll say specifically with the Battle of Alberta, but I'll also throw Vancouver and Winnipeg in there. Like, hockey's more fun when the Western Canadian teams are rolling, for sure. As far as James goes, I told him this word for word when he got traded, and then I went there for the home opener. I'm like, well, hey, where are you slotted? What's going on? He's like, well, yeah, I'm playing on the power play with McDavid and Dreisaitl and the rest of the characters there, and I'm playing on the second line, sometimes up to the first line. And I just flat out told him this. I'm like, James, look, I go, last year was tough on you. You didn't get an opportunity. For whatever reason, you and Bill Peters didn't see eye to eye. You didn't get an opportunity. You really didn't. For what he was making, he was never really had a chance to be the first line right winger. And he didn't handle that well. I'm like, you could not handpick a better situation for where you're at right now. You're playing with, if he isn't the best player in the world, he's one of them. You're with a coach, maybe more importantly, you're with a coach that you've had before that obviously likes you. I'm like, if you mess this up, dude, this is on you. Like, this, you couldn't handpick a better situation for yourself. And he was totally receptive. He's like, yeah, man, I know. I got to take advantage of this. I'm ready to roll. I had a full summer of workouts. Because that was one thing that kind of worked against him, too. He went to the finals 2 years in a row. He was hurt going into the summers both years after long playoff runs. You don't get to work out. And after a couple of summers, that is definitely going to add up. But, yeah, no, I'm happy for James. I know we talk about it on the radio here all the time because people are looking at it. You know, your average fan is just like, wait, we traded James Neal for Milan Lucic, and Lucic has one assist, and James has 9 goals. Like, what are we doing? But it's a totally... That's an unfair, you can't compare the two. I've been saying on the radio, I'm like, if you want to compare anything in that trade, you need to take whatever Lucic does this year with the Flames and compare it to what James did last year here with the Flames. Because basically, that's the opportunity that Lucic's playing the third, fourth line, and he's playing on the second power play unit. That's exactly what James Neal did last year. He played on the third line for basically the entirety of the year, and he was on the second power play unit. So if you want to compare stats, you want to do some comparisons, let's see what Milan does over the course of 82 games compared to what James did over the course of 82 games last year. Because if you're comparing them this year, that's completely unfair. Like, that's a... Lucic has no chance to live up to anything. Just Neal's playing with the best players in the world in the first power play unit, and he's playing on the second line. You can't compare that. So compare it to what he did last year. And so far, to be honest, I think Milan's done a good job. He's been tough. He's intimidating. He created a goal on Thursday night against Detroit, which basically won the game for him. But anyways, yeah, I'm getting a little off topic here, but I'm happy for James. He's happy up there. It's a good situation for him, and that's got to be a really good feeling.
Mike, you spent 2.5 years in Carolina, and the Hurricanes are surging again this year. What do you think of the storm surge? Do you like the fact that the players are having fun, that they don't really seem to care what anybody else thinks, that they're just focused on themselves, and they seem to be, again, they're being rewarded. They had a successful run last year, and it looks like they're going to have another one this year.
Yeah. I mean, when I first saw it last year, their little storm surge, and after the game, did I think it was pretty stupid? Yeah, I did. When I first saw it on TV, I'm like, what are these guys doing? This is embarrassing. But at the same time, I'm like, you know what? If the fans enjoy it, which it seems like they do, I'm like, great. I mean, you're in Carolina. If the team isn't awesome, you know, there's other things to do there. So whatever it takes to get more people in the seats and interested in the game, if you got to play duck hunter after the game and shoot guys from the bench with your hockey stick, hey, have at it. Have a good time. So I think it's good. And it's turned into, I think Rod Brind'Amour has done an excellent job there. I think the guys respect them there. They have a fast team. Is it my thing? I'm trying to picture myself, if I was on that team and going out there and having to do what's that dance where you put the stick and you got to go underneath it?
The limbo.
If I'm finishing up a hockey game and I'm out in the middle of the ice in front of 15,000 people and I got to do the limbo out there, I'm like, I don't think I would like that. But whatever, it seems like if it's working for them. I think it was a little bit of a rallying cry last year when Don Cherry called him a bunch of jerks and ripped on him on TV or whatever. I mean, I thought that was funny, and it was kind of a rallying point for the organization and for those guys, and they turned it into a trip to the conference finals. So, hey, if it works, don't fix it. Good for them.
Mike, last question for you. And you mentioned that, Bill Peters really didn't like James Neal last year and didn't really want, the general manager to acquire him. What's it like as a player knowing your head coach doesn't really like you and doesn't really want you on the roster?
I am well versed in that feeling. I have that a couple of times. That is not a good feeling. When you're showing up to the rink every day and you're like, look, this guy doesn't like me, and as a result, I don't like him. And, for James in particular, it's like, look, I just signed a 5-year deal here for almost $6 million a year. I'm a right winger. I was under the impression that I'm going to get a chance to play with Monahan and Gaudreau, and they traded for Lindholm. Lindholm was originally a center, and he was kind of the toss in. Hanifin was a big player in that deal. Lindholm's supposed to be a third line center. Now, Lindholm had a great year last year, and Bill Peters looked like a genius. Don't get me wrong, but at the same time, for James, it's like, well, why did you guys sign me? Why am I here? I'm not, I'm $6 million to be a checker. The fans are all over me. I'm like, this sucks. So, yeah, it's tough. Life could be worse. Don't get me wrong. At the end of the day, you're still in the NHL. But it is a job, and when you're showing up to work every day and not getting the opportunity that you thought you were going to get and you don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, that can lead to a very, very long year. I told James this too. I'm like, if you wouldn't have got traded and you came back here this year, and I've said this on the radio here too, I think he was going to be back on the third or fourth line, and I think there was a good, real good chance that he was going to be on his way out of the league. And so it's nice when it works out, when you're in a situation like that and you manage to get out of it and find a place for you where your talents are appreciated and people want you around and you're slotted where you should be. That's a very good feeling. So good for James. I think in a lot of ways, he's very, very fortunate that he got out of here.
Mike Commodore is a former NHLer. He's one of our favorites. Honesty, truth, that's what you get when he joins you on the radio. Mike, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for doing this.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. Call me anytime.
Take care, Mike. Thanks again. When we come back, we'll give you an update from Winnipeg Jets practice, some line rushes. We'll tell you who's in, who's out, or at least who appears to be in and who appears to be out for tomorrow night's game against the Oilers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Dregs is a hero, because he was the analyst in the studio for the Senators-Minnesota game on Thanksgiving Monday, and it was horror-awful, one of the worst games ever. Ottawa wasn't very good. Minnesota came in as the only team in the NHL without a single point. They were terrible for two periods, managed to eke out a victory. How is the patience level right now with the Wild?
It's pretty high with new GM Bill Guerin. And listen, it's already led to some speculation, obviously, about Bruce Boudreau's future. And it makes sense. I mean, he's a coach that's been inherited by a new GM. He's been there a while. His contract as a head coach is done at the end of the year.
That's James Duffy and Pierre LeBrun. Horror awful should be a description of more games in the NHL. That was pretty funny by Duffy there as part of the insider trading panel talking about the Minnesota Wild. They're off to a 1-6 start to the season. Their division mate in Dallas, the, of course, former North Stars, are 1-7-1. So two other Central Division teams off to a slow start. We'll briefly touch on that. Here's a quick rundown of everything that's happening at Winnipeg Jets practice. As we expected, Brian Little back on the ice in a regular jersey. Here are their forward lines as currently constructed. this might be the Lions tomorrow night against Edmonton, seems to be the case. Lion A. Shifley and Wheeler will stick together. Connor, Little, and Ehlers, where we talked about earlier in the show, would they keep Kopp up there? It looks no. The answer, Brian Little appears to be slotting into that second-line center role. A third line of Kopp, Lowry, and Roslovic. Kopp moving from that second-line center role to the wing. And then a fourth line of Perreault, Gustafsson, and Bork/Appleton. So we'll see which of Bork or Appleton will be the scratch tomorrow night. So Brian Little does seem to be going back into that second-line center role ahead of tomorrow's contest against the Edmonton Oilers, Dave.
Well, clearly they didn't listen to our segment.
Clearly not. Shockingly didn't listen to us.
I mean, again, I'm not surprised because Maurice specifically stated that he wanted to put Little back into a role he was comfortable in, and he wasn't going to... we talked about it, why it made sense practically, but he just wanted him to be comfortable in that center position. So for good or worse. For better or worse.
Yeah, there you go.
Brian Little.
It was a good comic strip.
Yeah. It was a good comic strip, actually. Yeah. But anyways, Brian Little, yeah, he's your...
better or for worse.
Thank you.
Brian Little's your second-line center. It appears to be tomorrow night.
At least
I'm throwing you off, Dave. Sorry.
That's okay.
I tend to do that sometimes.
A little chirping. I got to be able to handle it. But no, I mean, again, we already know that Kopp and Lowry and Roslovic could be a very good... I mean, the happiest person right now is Adam Lowry.
No question.
Because Adam Lowry went from floundering with Bork and Letestu... to at just least
criminal,
having...
It's criminal usage of Adam Lowry.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, we'll see what happens, whether it's Bork or Appleton tonight.
Tomorrow night,
of course. But, I mean, again, it's a function of do you want to trust a younger player in that role with Gustafsson and Perreault? I mean, I think that line would have some upside as your fourth line with Appleton in it.
Yeah. But like we said, I have no questions... about the success of a line of Kopp, Lowry, and Roslovic. I think it will be successful. I have a lot of questions about a line of Connor, Little, and Ehlers, and I don't know if it will be as successful.
And you know what? We talked about it. Kopp, Ehlers, and Connor has been so good. That's what's unfortunate about it. You have to break up something that's been so successful. So I think Little... he'll be fine because he's a veteran and you know what to expect out of Little. I don't know if he's going to be as effective as Kopp. I would expect him not to be, but I would also say this. I mean, when you've played, 11, 12, 13 years in the NHL and this is his first game of the year. I mean, he's missed the first 9 games of the season. I mean, if anybody can step right into this role, it's Brian Little. That's all I'm going to say. So I'm not saying Brian Little is going to score a hat trick tomorrow night. All I'm saying is I also don't think that it's going to be a disaster and Little is going to struggle big time. So
he's not a scrub.
No, right. He's not. And that's why, it goes back to what we were talking about before. The Brian Little 2C versus 3C versus, wing on the third line or second line. Really, I mean, it's a luxury to have when you have a guy like Brian Little that you can put out on your third line. But long term... That's what we're talking about here, because Brian Little is centering that second line tomorrow night, Drew, doesn't mean that's something that we're going to see long term. Because right now, Andrew Kopp is a great option for Paul Maurice on that second line, and I think this is his fourth year, his fifth year in the league. He's deserved, I think, now the increased responsibilities that come with being that second line center, and I don't think anybody's going to fault
are now being taken away as he moves back to the third line wing.
And that's why I said it's unfortunate that Kopp is going to be sent down to, or not sent down, but he's going to be demoted, if you want to call it that, even though it's not really a demotion. But yeah, we'll see what happens. It's always an option that you can use Little on the third line going forward too.
I'm very curious to see how the Jets forward lines perform tomorrow night in a game where the Jets desperately need a win after losing 3 in a row on home ice.
It's a must win. It really is, though, Dave. I mean, you got to win tomorrow. You can't go 4 losses in a row on a homestand.
I mean, it's early in the season, so I don't think it's season ending. I think it's very pivotal for this team to start feeling good about themselves again. And that could start Sunday night. I just think that, the other thing also we have to think of is, like you said, Drew, it's not 100% lock that this will be a long-term solution. So even if it isn't, even if it just means getting a veteran center in a comfortable role, then, as he gets more comfortable, he starts to feel better about his game. I mean, again, he hasn't played 9 games. So once he is in that comfort zone, once he's more comfortable, then perhaps we'll see Brian Little moving to the wing.
When we come back, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton is going to join us. More about the Oilers, the Jets' opponent tomorrow night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we are live here on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. The Jets and the Oilers tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. Still to come this afternoon on the station, Blue and Gold Game Day, Walby, Westwood Bombing. Get you set for the Bombers and the Stampeders from Calgary. And then later on this evening, 6 p.m. puck drop. The Moose and the Iowa Wild do battle again as the Moose look to avenge last night's defeat.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Dave Jamieson. Dave, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How was your hockey game this morning?
Well, you know what? How about we not spend a lot of time talking about my hockey? It was not good, and I missed an open net that I'm still trying to figure out how exactly I missed the open net. But all of that said, we're pretty excited about the Oilers, not my hockey game.
I was going to say your hockey game was more reminiscent of last year's Oilers than this year's Oilers.
Yeah, come on, Dave. We thought you were the real deal.
I'm nothing approaching the real deal.
Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Oilers. They make a visit to Winnipeg tomorrow night, 7-1 through the first eight games. You know, to no one's surprise, McDavid and Draisaitl are tearing things up. Uber talented superstars should get points. From my perspective, it's the back end, it's the goaltending, it's the defense that is most impressive about the Oilers' start so far this season.
Yeah, without question. You know, the Draisaitl and McDavid are going to get theirs, whatever else is happening with this team. But you're right, the goaltending has been beyond a pleasant surprise. And the evolution of Ethan Bear, who had a goal last night in the win over Detroit, that whole collective is surprisingly resilient. And I mean, you know, the Oilers have battled back in a lot of games. They put themselves in a position where, you know, they've shown that there may be more fiber here, if you know what I mean, in terms of this is a team still very much trying to figure out who and what they are. But based on, you know, what we've seen to this point is that there may be an Oiler team the likes of which we really haven't seen in a while.
You know, further to Drew's point, Dave, you know, we talked about it. I'm sure you've talked about it on your show, and it's been talked a lot about on TSN 1260. When Adam Larson went out with the injury, everybody was thinking, oh, here we go again. And you look at that Oilers defense, you mentioned Ethan Bear, and, you know, I caught a little bit of the Oilers Wings game. And, you know, every time I watch Darnell Nurse, I'm just so impressed. He signed that 2-year deal at around the same time Josh Morrissey signed his short-term contract with the Jets. You know, he's playing 22, 23 minutes a night. Do you think he gets enough credit for, you know, the top pairing defenseman that he's turned into?
Not yet, but I think he's really close. And you're talking to a Darnell Nurse fan. I think that he has a rare combination of skating ability. I think there's a reasonable level of offensive upside there. I don't think he's fully hit all of what we could see from that part of his game. But I also like the edge he plays with. In 2019, I know that there's not a lot of players that have that in their game. He's one of those guys you sort of look at and you go, I could see him succeeding at another time in hockey because he's, I'll say, you know, he arrives at the rink in a bad mood and stays that way for much of the game. And I really like who he is, and I think the player he's becoming. So I'm with you. I mean, a lot of people were saying, oh God, with Larson out, I mean, Larson, I'm not going to say he's limited. I mean, Peter Chiarelli, when they traded for him, said he's not a sexy player, which is hardly the way you want to sell it. But that said, he is, but Adam Larson is kind of like a backbone. He's a backbone player that is going to make it tough for others to work in the Oilers' defensive end, and he's going to be tough around the net. You need that. You know, having to give up Taylor Hall, we can debate that trade at another time. But, to your point, though, about the defense and the goaltending, it's kind of blowing people's minds, to be honest, because not many people had high hopes for Mikko Koskinen, and Mike Smith was kind of a wait-and-see thing.
You know, Dave, I want to ask you about a Regina product named Ethan Bear. Of course, he's a player we saw play in Bakersfield, saw him play against the Manitoba Moose. He's a real nice young player, 2015 fifth rounder, but he seems to have stuck with the Oilers. What have you seen from him this season?
Well, I see a lot of poise. He made, and with defensemen, you know, he scored last night. That was great, kind of a seeing eye goal. But it's the little stuff. It's the not panicking when you're being pursued in your end, and you know, there's pressure coming. He's making nice outlet passes. I don't think he's trying to do more than he's capable of, and that will often happen for young players. They will, especially guys who are, you know, defensemen, they may put themselves in positions that I would call high danger, but he seems to be able to kind of keep things to the outside, doesn't let the game get too far ahead of him. So I think a lot of people are sort of going, and you got a bit of it last year, and you've heard reports from Bakersfield, but now seeing it here, you think, okay, you know, wouldn't it be nice if the Oilers could just develop somebody, not rush them, and then see this player, you know, sort of grow before your eyes, as opposed to what the Oilers have, you know, historically done, which is rush players and then have to trade them.
Dave Jamieson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Dave is a radio host on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. The Oilers in town to visit the Jets tomorrow evening. You know, Dave, we know that Dave Tippett and Ken Holland bring, you know, a professionalism and bring that reputation to everywhere they go in and around the NHL. But what about Tippett has impressed you the most thus far in his limited stint as Oilers head coach?
Well, probably, other than guiding the team to the success that they've had so far, is what he said after the win over Philadelphia. Now, if you looked at the scoreboard, you'd go 6-3. Well, shouldn't everybody be happy? And Dave Tippett seemed actually angry with a win. And for people in Edmonton who are, you know, we haven't been in the winning business for very long out here. It was surprising for people to hear Tippett be as tough on the team as he was. I mean, they weren't very good against Philadelphia. They got badly outshot, and they had six really good minutes. And, you know, when you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you may only need 6 minutes of good hockey to win games, but that doesn't impress a guy like Dave Tippett, because he's looking, and this is good, because we're not used to this, where he looks at it and says, yeah, okay, that was great, and Connor McDavid, you know, skated under a puck and outraced another player and had a goal that was fabulous, and so-and-so did this and that, but he just said, look, Koskinen won us the games. And, of course, that's not something we've heard here before either, where Mikko Koskinen out-and-out won a game. He was, you know, good in little bits last year, but largely pretty mediocre. So I think Tippett, just without browbeating the team, I think that the level of expectation here with Tippett and Holland is it's high, and maybe higher than it's been before, but you know, Peter Chiarelli was very experienced. Todd McClellan was very experienced. I mean, we're not going from, you know, brand X to Holland and Tippett. I mean, the Oilers have had good people here before. They just haven't had good results.
Dave, I wanted to ask you about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. As you know, he's been under the spotlight since he was drafted first overall. I guess that was 8 years ago, and he's obviously playing on that line with the real deal. And even though James is getting a lot of those goals on the power play, they've obviously started clicking right from the beginning of the preseason. Is Nugent Hopkins maybe the biggest beneficiary of the hot start of that top line and the way James Neal's playing? Because he seems like a player, and granted, he's coming off of that career year. I think he had 69 points last year, so it's not like he's coming off of a bad year, but does it just seem like this is a different Nugent Hopkins who maybe has less pressure on him this year?
I think that that's a great assessment of where he, you know, kind of where he is, the role he plays. He's very important to this team. And, I mean, he has been, you know, if there is such a thing in hockey as or sports as a good soldier, he has been the ultimate good soldier. I mean, I think he's lost count of the coaches he's played for and the players he's played with. But, you know, he has maintained a high level of play through some really bad years. And a guy who never complains. He does little things exceptionally well. I mean, if you didn't pay close attention to Nugent Hopkins on some nights, you'd miss him. And that doesn't mean he's not effective. It's just the way he goes about his, you know, the style of his game. And, you know, when he was taken as high as he was, I think people have in their mind what a guy drafted that position is going to be. Well, he's not that player, but he's really good at a lot of things you need, face-offs, checking diligence in picking up his guy coming back into the zone. I mean, I, again, not unlike Darnell Nurse, I'm a big fan of Ryan Nugent Hopkins. I've always liked the way he plays and the way he conducts himself. And so I think, you know, having James Neal here and doing what he's doing currently allows Nugent Hopkins to just kind of go and be a really, really good, high-level, complementary player. They still count on him. They need him. They really need him to contribute offensively, but it's not like if he doesn't, you know, or goes a few games where it's a little quiet on that front, he's still able to do meaningful things for them.
You know, Dave, the scuttlebutt this week was talk of Taylor Hall returning to Edmonton. So what kind of credence do you give to that talk? Is that just completely out there, or is that just, does it make any sense?
There's a couple of questions in there. Does it make any sense? Well, I would say no. I know Taylor Hall said nice things when he left the city of Edmonton. That's fine. A lot of athletes do. Maybe he did enjoy his time here. He had good personal success here, but the collective was not very good, right? It was a bad organization. He arrived. A lot was expected. And he bore the brunt of a lot of those bad years. Anyhow, all of that said, I think you'd have to ask yourself, well, first of all, the Oilers don't have room for him. So they're going to have to lose somebody. Okay, they're going to have to lose a Nugent Hopkins because they're a cap crunch team. And so, you know, I think the notion of Taylor Hall, you know, the people in Edmonton are very excited about what the Oilers are doing now. And a lot of people have, you know, when they see what Hall did, went off and won a Hart Trophy in New Jersey, and the fact that they got Adam Larson, who is a very good player, but certainly he's not a Hart Trophy winner, people go, well, wouldn't it be great if we could kind of get the boys back together again and we could try and, you know, it's unfinished business. We never really had McDavid and Hall together for very long. Wouldn't it be great? They'll be magical together. Well, I mean, a number of years have passed now. It's McDavid's team and Dreisaitl's team. And does Taylor Hall want to come in and play a number three? I don't know. Like, to me, it seems far-fetched. But then people, you know, hey, we're kind of on a sugar high right now at Edmonton. We're all hopped up on, on good hockey or winning hockey, so we're not thinking straight.
Well, the Oilers certainly are playing winning hockey, something we're not used to saying. The Jets will be in tough tomorrow evening as the Oilers visit Bell MTS Place to do battle with the Jets. Dave Jamieson is our good friend from TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, thanks so much for doing this. Have a great weekend.
You too, guys. Thanks.
Take care, Dave. When we come back, one final segment, we'll look around the NHL, and we'll wrap it up, of course, with cheers and jeers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, segment Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio, 1290. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, all the way from New York City. Phil Hanley, get your tickets now. They're going quick. Two shows, 7:15, 10 p.m. Tickets available to see Phil Hanley at rumorscomedyclub.com. Yesterday, a big contract signing by your New Jersey Devils, Mr. Ginsberg. Nico Hischier, 7 years, $50.75 million salary cap hit of $7.25 million, buys out 3 years of unrestricted free agency for a player who was coming off his entry-level deal at season's end. Your thoughts on the Hischier contract?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and he's obviously not had the best start. He still is looking for his first goal. The Devils, as we know, are struggling big time. John Hines has to be on the hot seat, especially with Tom Fitzgerald now coming down to the bench.
But assistant GM Tom Fitzgerald moving down to the bench as an assistant coach.
That's right. And, you know, when you look at Hischier, you know that he hasn't even come close to hitting his ceiling. You know, he scored 20 goals in his rookie year. He's a guy that they expect to be, an 80 to 90 point player. They certainly envisioned that when they drafted him first overall back in 2017. So it just makes a lot of sense because you might be overpaying him a little bit next year. But if he turns into that 35-40 goal scorer and that kind of 80 to 90 point guy, and you're paying him an average of $7 million a year, I think that's going to end up being a good bargain. And, you know, you have to bring up Taylor Hall because you have to think that they want to get this out of the way, knowing what happened with all of those RFAs, Drew, Lion A, Rantanen, Connor, Kachuk. You know that they didn't want to be in this situation with Hischier. So,
well, especially with Hall as an unrestricted free agency,
right.
If they don't get it done then and Hall leaves, then he can really hold them over the barrel a little bit worse. So they get the contract done and they know that they have, you know, their top draft pick in their lineup for the next 7 years.
Right. And it's not going to be too long before they're going to have to lock up Jack Hughes after his entry-level deal, and he's probably going to be around $7, $8, $9 million a year as well. So you want to get this done early, right?
That's what you get for drafting guys that high.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something safe like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Dave Minuk, cheering or jeering?
I'm cheering.
Hey,
got to be positive.
There you go.
Cheering Ralph Kruger.
Yeah,
nice.
Doing a heck of a good job in Buffalo. I like the fact that, you know, the Sabres went with a coach that's a little off the board. And look what he's been able to do. I mean, he's taken a Sabres team that has had a lot of expectations for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's turning them into something. I mean, it's early in the season, but they're 6-1-1 and leading the Eastern Conference. So Ralph Kruger gets my cheer.
Certainly proving that he got a raw deal when he got dismissed as Oilers coach by Skype. Which, again, you shouldn't be doing, in case you didn't know that. Best HR practices are saying don't fire a colleague by Skype. Ezzy.
Victor Mete scores his first NHL goal in game number 127.
I'm assuming this is a cheer and not a jeer.
Yeah, no, it's obviously a cheer.
Yeah.
He waited a long time, you know, a high draft pick of the Canadiens who waited a long time. And it was a beautiful goal coming in off of the blue line, a nice one-timer. It was against the Wild that he scored the goal. So
does it count as a full goal if you score it against the Wild?
Three
quarters.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And in the same game, Nick Suzuki got his first career NHL goal. So a night of first for the Montreal Canadiens a couple nights ago. I'm going to wrap up. It's a unanimous night of cheering. I'm going to cheer Zach Cassian of the Edmonton Oilers. He spoke about it honestly with Frank Saravelli, a TSN senior hockey writer, about his struggles with addiction and overcoming those struggles. And it's great to see a guy who had a high draft pick pedigree get his life in order and now be a dominant player for the Edmonton Oilers. That's it for the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests, Dave Jamieson, Mike Commodore, Lisa Dillman, and Trevor Kidd. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review us, get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Alex doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.